you for joining in once again and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Aaron Howlett. Join us again as we go on another culinary adventure of the Comox Valley and beyond.
You're listening to episode 172, Fitzgerald Farm.
Well, hello. Today we are meeting Diane from Fitzgerald Farms in Merville, just a few miles north of Courtenay, for the Edible Valley podcast. I'm the producer, William Stringer. We also have our presenters, Gion Fraser.
Hello.
And Darren Howlett.
Hi.
And our guest today moved to the Valley 4 years ago from Vancouver, where she met her partner, Andrew, who, along with Diane, also had a huge passion and desire for a simpler way of life and to farm. And they set out creating a list of things that they needed to get done, starting with moving here. And it is a list of things that they continue to tick off today. But Diane's passion for all things local and farming can be traced back much further to her time in Toronto, where she trained as a sommelier with the International Sommeliers Guild. And armed with this knowledge and passion, she went on to open a successful fine dining restaurant in Flesherton, Ontario, which is a small all-season town of about 800 people. But after many happy years, she heard her province of BC calling her home and moved to Osseuse, where she was a sommelier for such distinguished vineyards as Ircomeep, where eventually, heading home to Vancouver, she met Andrew and started her plans for what we now know as Fitzgerald Farms. Diane, thank you so much for bringing us to this enchanting place. We have a lot to get through today. So without further ado, I'm going to pass you over to John.
All right. Thanks, Diane, so much for coming out.
That was quite the introduction.
Well, that's why we bring Will along. He's just fun for that stuff, right? So. But we're so excited to be out here, eh, Darren?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful farm.
I'm
to see.
Excited.
We're sitting out in the garden here, so you may hear some birds chirping and the odd saw cutting in the background or what.
A rooster crowing.
But it's gorgeous out here. We're sitting overlooking your garden.
Yes,
I want to say garden, but this is really the farm with a couple greenhouses. And in the background, we have the beautiful red barn, which is just a nice little ambiance to the whole place.
Yeah, quite pastoral.
It took us a long time to actually come to that color. We knew we wanted red, but we really wanted a red that would stick out and wasn't just your ordinary sort of darker red. And we loved it so much that we actually painted our house the same color.
I was going to say, I really love it.
So I've taken tons of pictures. I'm hoping we'll get some up.
But we struck out different on the garage and did it the bright yellow.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was telling you guys earlier about just liking color. Color is, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were talking about a lot of your vegetables out there, like you like to do the different colors. But that's maybe the start. How did you find yourself getting into farming? What drew you into this?
Well, as Will so, you know, subtly mentioned in the intro, when I met Andrew, he had been actually sort of researching farming and moving to the island. He had been looking for a couple of years, and I kind of just jumped on his bandwagon, and he said, you know, how do you feel about moving to the island? And I'm like, sure. Okay. So started watching a lot of YouTube videos, people like Charles Dowding and Jean-Martin Fortier. They were so interesting in what they were doing on not a lot of land. Mm-hmm. It was spectacular. So I'm like, well, we can do that. So armed with absolutely no knowledge whatsoever about what we were doing, we finally found our property, which we just fell in love with, and set about once we moved here. So we just passed our 4th year anniversary, actually, on July 12th. We set about to transforming because none of this was here. when we got here.
So it was just the house on here?
There was the house, the Quonset, and the garage. There were probably about 1,300 foot or 150 foot fir trees planting the front that were doing a great job at shading the back. And on the other side of the driveway as well, there was a whole line of trees and that. And we just wanted to really open everything up, and especially to get the sun to come in on this area.
Mm-hmm.
Before we even bought the farm or the property, we actually had the soil tested, how organic it was, and it was very organic.
Oh, good.
We just struck gold. We found out later that the person who built the house was a soil specialist.
Oh, you're kidding.
So he chose this property specifically for its soil.
Really?
Yeah. So we're like, well, okay, that's cool and lucky. So, you know, there were no rocks in it because a lot of people in this area have issues with rocks in their
I have my aunt and uncle live fairly close to this area, and they have a little hobby farm with, and we've all, the family has all spent times picking rocks in the field for them. It's pretty brutal.
It's a pastime in this area. Yeah. Rock picking.
So, that's quite the leap of faith that you just sort of came out here not really knowing exactly what you're going to do, not knowing exactly what was in store for you, and not having all that forehand knowledge. So what I would have to imagine that you've gone through a bit of trial and error. Have you tried some things like in your learning process?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot. Like I was telling Will earlier, you know, animals that we've had so far, we've done ducks,
right,
you know, and as easy as they were and fairly, you know, good on a, you know, profitable aspect, you know, we started out with 3 and somehow ended up with 31.
Wow.
And so then you have to sort of build a compound for them but they quickly outgrow that.
Right.
And you don't take ducks to that great gig in the sky until they're about 17 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So, and they can get quite big, and they, of course, outgrow. We had them, they just ran the roost of the place.
Really?
After a while. Yeah, they were just everywhere. It's taken years to get rid of all the feathers. You can still look down and see some of them every now and then. And they also, even though they're Muscovies and they are not supposed to fly, they can jump pretty high with their wings and get into someone's garden and eat absolutely everything. So, when I saw that, it was like, time to go.
Right.
They're ready now.
They're ready.
So, you know, Muscovy, a heritage breed, beautiful. And next was the pigs. And of course, you know, being in that heritage mode and nothing but the best, we spent a lot of money on a pig called Cooney Coonies. Well, you know, you had half a Cooney Coonie.
Yeah, well, it's true.
And they're not a large pig. We got them because we didn't need rooting pigs. We didn't need pigs to clear out stuff. We wanted pigs that didn't root. These ones don't root. They're beautiful. They're super friendly. I always tell people, you know, that way if you fall down in their pen, they won't eat you.
Right.
And they love to play with you and stuff like that. They're just fantastic. I loved them.
Right.
But, you know, they are so expensive to, number one, invest in like a breeding pair.
Right.
And then, you know, feeding them. And we have found out, and I'm sure you did too, is that there's not a whole heck of a lot of meat on them. They're excellent for charcuterie. That's what they should be used for.
Right.
I've got a friend in Soyuz, actually, who I sent him home with a great big, I can't remember what it was. It was either belly, and he made prosciutto And yeah. it's like in absolutely insanely beautiful and delicious. And he made sausage.
Well, I have to say, I took some of those pork bellies, and that was for Darren's birthday party.
Yeah, that was good.
I roasted really them good. Off.
The pork belly was delicious.
Yeah, it was super fatty and just like, so I cooked that for, it must have been like 6 hours, like super slow, and then had it over a creamy polenta, and it was...
Yeah, we got like the good roast out of them, but... when we took a bunch in and they weren't as big as the ones we did that one of the ones you got and so the pork chops are like the tiniest things in the world.
So they're more, it's less about bulk and more about flavor with those.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And they're very flavorful. So much fat on them. They're, you know, a lot of people have called them like the Wagyu of pork.
Oh. Really? Mm.
You know, because of the fat content and the marbling that goes through it and stuff like that. But, you know, we quickly realized that this is definitely not a profitable...
Right. Endeavor?
Endeavor, yeah. So we actually sold our last two live ones to a couple of guys. Do you know Lyle that owns the kayak store?
Yeah,
he lives on Arden.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's got, they've got two of our pigs. Yeah, our last, my two favorites. I was very hard pressed to let them go, but I was made to. Anyway, so yeah, so you know, and then we did the cows, and we had Dexter cattle, and
you were showing some.
Yeah,
your neighbors have a couple.
My neighbors have a couple of the offspring of our bull, and they were fantastic too. So again, not a big breed, so quite manageable, and that's important, you know, on a small farm to have manageability, and so that they're not going to tear up a field because of their weights and stuff like that,
of course,
which they can easily do. They were fantastic, and I wish we still had some. I've been sort of asking for another cow.
that's a dream to come in the future. Is that what you're?
Yeah, our freezer is empty. So
it's funny. We were talking with another farm just last week, and for a birthday gift, one of them received a cow.
Yeah,
and I thought that was such a sort of a spin. I had never thought of receiving a cow as a gift, but then here you are.
Yeah.
Like, the greatest thing I could get right now is a cow.
It would be awesome. Well, and it's funny because, you know, I named every single one of my animals, except the ducks. The parents all had names, but 31 duck names I couldn't come up with. But all the pigs had names, and even all the babies that they eventually had, and the cows and everything. And people would say to me, you know, how can you name your animals and then eat them? And I'm like, well, you know, part of doing this was self-sustainability.
Right.
We know exactly where our food's coming from. I truly believe that, you know, they are so loved and it makes them taste so much better. Vegetarians will have, or the vegans will have a field day.
I absolutely see value in that. If you're giving them love and attention and a name and absolutely making them feel like they're part of something, there's a lot less stress in their life. There's a lot less everything, which unfortunately, I mean, breaking that down, it does come down to the quality of the meat. If high stress, that's going to be awful meat.
Absolutely.
Low stress is...
And, you know, just for all those veggie eaters and everything, I talk to my plants, my garden.
Oh, yeah?
Every single day.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so, you know, and people ask me, you know, why are these beets so huge? You know, my beets aren't that big. My beets aren't. And I said, well, they're grown with love. But I do. I talk to them constantly.
I think that's what my garden's always missing, is like going out there and having a love chat with it and being like, you guys are good beets.
Yeah.
I like you peas.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to start doing that starting tomorrow, I think.
I swear at the weeds, but they've got no...
So they still come back.
And they still come back, yeah.
So not trying to move everything too along. We've got a lot to cover. So now you've got chickens.
Yeah, so now we're doing the heritage breed Misto Gris chickens. And so they have been really easy to do. But again, and, you know, as you were saying, the farm you talked to last week, they're doing chickens as well and broke it down. And, you know, this is why chickens cost so much. And when we come out and, you know, the cost per our cost per bird is over $20. So, you know, we have to, you know, as much as we're keeping the majority of them for ourselves, you know, we are still selling some. So, you know, we have to make that money. So when people wonder why, especially coming off a small farm, mm-hmm. it's more expensive than those. Think about where your chicken that you're buying it's coming from.
Right.
And I mean, you've all seen those horrible videos. You don't want to even know about it. But those are the chickens that are costing their makers, you know, $5.
No, and you absolutely, I mean, you have completely opposite. You got lots of room. Oh, I can hear them in the background right now. Yeah. Got lots of room and wide open space and nice little covering. And
yeah, they've decided to come outside.
Oh, nice. Yeah. They heard us talking about them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, and I've got lots of scraps here that I literally tried to give them these, you know, the lettuce and my neighbor's chickens, who I give them to all the time. She has laying chickens, so they okay. She does eggs. And I get wheelbarrows full, like when I'm cleaning romaine and cleaning beets and stuff like that. I have wheelbarrows full of greens and stuff like that. And I'll take them over. And now when they hear me coming, they come running because they know I'm about to throw the mother load of scraps over to them. But these guys weren't so interested in it. They were more interested in trying to get into the ground and getting grubs and stuff like that.
Right.
I kept saying, if it's not beige, they don't want to eat it.
I had a roommate like that.
Yeah. A lot of kids like that these days.
So actually, let's go on to the vegetables from here, because I like how most of what you've been talking about is about heritage breeds.
Yes.
Especially with the animals. But you're doing the same thing with the vegetables here, aren't you?
Absolutely. And it's all about the color. I love being colorful. I love having that colorful display when I go to the markets and having those multicolored carrots. And, you know, I take it further and I have multicolored beets and multicolored potatoes. So sometimes it takes a bit of explaining to people.
Education. As in the first time I ever sent out purple potatoes on a plate.
Yeah.
And they came back.
Really?
And they said, excuse me, but can you tell the chef that our potatoes are rotten?
Help support the Edible Valley podcast.
Wow.
And I was literally like, those are purple potatoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just broke my heart.
I know. And I get a lot of like, so what do they taste like? And I'm like, well, they taste like potatoes, only better.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of what gets people to really interested is when I said, there's higher nutrients in these vegetables because of their color.
Mm-hmm.
So in the potatoes, they're higher nutrition than a regular white potato or Yukon Gold or something like that because of the color. The color brings more nutrition in. Yeah, learn something new every day.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, so, well, and that's like even with the carrots and stuff like
Well, yeah, the rainbow carrots, and which are beautiful, and it just, it's fun, and they just taste like carrots. And same with the beets. People ask me if they taste differently with the candy cane beets or the golden beets or the red beets, and I'm like, they taste like beets.
Yeah.
They're all just beets. And you know, Swiss chard, I've got the rainbow Swiss chard as well, so you know. Patty pan squash, like a bright yellow patty pans. Right. I do yellow zucchinis and green zucchinis, but and then tomatoes. I've got black cherry tomatoes.
Mm.
I've got the sun gold tomatoes, and then I've got the red Juliets and the early girls. I think I only do. Oh, I've got yellow taxis as well, and a yellow Roma. So I do a multiple color of tomatoes too. Right. They're a little slow this year. We had a little bit of rain and cold weather going into middle of July.
Do you find that there's certain vegetables that sell better for you at the markets than other vegetables, or do you find like there's a draw for people what they're asking for, or is it really what you're producing?
I like to think that I'm pretty well known for my carrots and beets, especially. Those two things, especially this year, because the Amarose potatoes and the Blue Russian potatoes are the only ones I'm doing. People are getting much more familiar with me selling those potatoes as well. Yeah, it's trying to figure out, and one of the problems in growing veggies is trying to figure out what people want and what's going to sell, because. You know, I know people that grow everything and I've been told, that try to come down on how much you're growing or how many different things you're growing, because you're just, you can't sell them all. And I do, I have issues with room on my tables. I you know, last year I could fit everything I needed to go to market in my little car. This year I take our truck.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just don't have room, and I need to buy like more coolers, and I've got big bins now that I take, which I never thought I would. I saw all these other big farms, you know, like Amara and Mervo Organics, and, you know, they come with their trucks and their bins, and I'm like, I want to be that. I aspire to that.
Yeah.
And so I find myself getting to that point as well, which is very exciting. And but what's more exciting is that people are actually are buying it and loving it. So
you're not taking it all to market and bringing half of it home.
No,
that's great.
No,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's always difficult to actually try and figure out how much to take to market. And I would rather take more than less. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it doesn't work that way.
This might be a good time to actually say which markets you're going to be at, or where people can find you, and
so,
where they can get a hold of some of these great things.
I do the Merville Gumboot Market on Sundays. It runs from 3 to 6, and it's at the Great, or the Big Yellow Hall in Merville, just past the Merville General Store. And then I just started doing the Sand Dollar Market on Thursday nights. It runs from 3 till 7 at the Pacific Playground Campground up at Saratoga Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and they've got a lot of locals have been coming to it, as well as, you know, you've got a whole campground full of people.
Right.
That, you know,
On holidays with not big freezers or freezers.
Yeah. They just want immediate vegetables, you know, for the evening or for the week, you know, sort of type thing. So it's really great. And there hasn't been a produce vendor there before.
Oh.
So, you know, I'm really happy to go and do that. And I will be at the Garlic Fest as well. It's held every year at the Merville Hall, mm-hmm. and it happens to be on a Sunday, which is our market day. So we cancel our market day for that day, and vendors can then participate in the Garlic Fest. So I did that last year, and it was really great, and I really loved it.
I remember chatting with you a little bit, and you're like, I'm out of everything.
Yeah, I'll take more this year. Yeah. I sold out in about an hour and a half, I think.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a little crazy.
I showed up a little late, and I think you had like some carrots. And
yeah, I don't even know if I had carrots. I think the carrots went straight. I think I might have had like some leeks or...
Yeah, it was...
Yeah, I had a couple things of Swiss chard.
Yeah.
Just strewn.
And then... yeah, you're surrounded here by lots of other, I don't know, I'm reluctant to call them a hobby farm. They're more, you know, just the smaller farm. We're not the large industrial farms. But you seem like this entire area has lots of growers around you. So is there a bit of community there? Is there a bit of support for each other?
Yeah, and it's great that you should actually ask that, because, you know, a few of us neighbors, and we're in this sort of almost, not a cul-de-sac, but dead end.
Right.
So you come over McEachran Bridge and, you know... We all said once COVID was really getting rampant, we were going to put a gate on the other side of the bridge. Now I could get in or out. So we know everybody. Everybody knows each other. All the farms know each other. And so one of my neighbors, or a few of us neighbors, have been talking about trying to promote this actual, you know, Fitzwin neighborhood, because Wynn Road is the other road on the other side, and then this is Fitzgerald, as a sort of destination farm market place for people to come and buy straight off the farm.
Well, that's what I saw when we crossed the bridge today. There's that little...
Our little bus stop that we...
Yeah.
And one of our neighbors down on Wynn actually took it upon himself just to fix that up and renovate it and make it nice again. And, you know, we actually had a little tape cutting, and it's really corny, but fun. My neighbor, like she does the most beautiful flower arrangements, and she's got a stand up on Regent Road in Black Creek that she sells her flowers at, and she takes orders. She also does eggs.
Oh, wow.
So she has people come to the house for eggs, or she... done the gumboot market. And then we have across the road Ripple Farm, which used to be part of Merville Organics, but the original owner sold the farm, right. And the two new owners, they have just recently sort of started to get the farm into shape again, and they might change the name, but so we've got them, and Carolina happens to be the manager, organizer of the Merville Market, so she's got great organizational skills, and she's also the Hoyn rep on Vancouver Island.
Oh, wow.
Really
good friend.
Really handy to have across the road. And then we've got Rock Bottom Farms, which is, he is the pepper tomato guy at the Comox Valley Farmers Market, the big one, and he's on Wynn Road, and he's just down the road there. So
wow,
we've got, you know, a reason for people to sort of, they can come and either walk, or because it's a lovely walk.
I used
roads.
To take the dog for a walk just by the bridge there.
Yeah.
There's some trails around there. It's beautiful. Yeah.
So people can come and fill their baskets and come up to the farms and...
Yes, and your farm is open for people to come up here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got a Facebook page called Fitzgerald Farms, and so it's got the address. It's got my email address, and it's got my phone number on it. So if people are interested in coming to the farm to pick something up, if it's not a market day, we're here basically all the time.
Perfect.
Yeah, we don't generally leave, so...
Yeah, a lot of that going on.
We've been social distancing forever. People ask, you know, has your life changed? No, not at all, not in the slightest.
So we sort of glossed over what was to come, but I think that would be maybe we can talk about that for a minute.
You're asking about the future of the farm.
Yeah, you were just putting up a fence.
Yeah, so we just put up a new fence around our pasture. I'm hoping maybe even later this week we've got some Dorper sheep coming.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a couple of ewes and a ram. We're buying them locally. We found a farmer at Ponderosa sod farm, actually. And this gentleman who emigrated over from South Africa, and he's a preeminent judge of Dorper sheep. That for people that don't know, they're a hair sheep, so we don't have to worry about shaving fleece.
Right.
Okay.
They basically shed their hair. They are the very cute ones with black heads and white bodies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're a meat sheep. So he's got this spectacular line of sheep that he managed to get some ewes over from South Africa, plus he brought a few hundred semen samples over.
Oh,
so that's how he is propagating his and diversifying his flock, because he had a huge sheep farm in South Africa and cattle farm.
Wow.
So yeah, we were really lucky to sort of meet him, and it just happened we drove by and noticed that he had Dorper sheep, so I phoned him and he invited us over to the farm, and we were lucky enough to go over just after a couple of lambs had been born, and I was like, I would want to take them home now. So they're coming on later this week, hopefully. We have already started talking about expanding the garden out some more, too. We have plans for a berry patch as well. But it's going to go further out.
As obviously anybody listening right now can't see exactly what we're looking at, but I would say that we're probably in our immediate field of view. There's a few acres. How far do you actually own?
We have 10 acres.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a lot left to develop. Is that in the works?
We're going to try not to develop it. There's about 7 acres under forest that we've actually got fenced because we put our cows in there. They did great in there, and so we might put the sheep in there at one point if we want them to eat some stuff in their down.
Right.
We actually had two calves born in the forest, and it took us days to find them. Like,
really?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dexters are great at giving birth. They never need any help. So we just noticed that the moms weren't pregnant anymore. And it was like, okay, now we have to go find these little.
Go a little
calves.
Exploring.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty much of a bit of a goose chase for poor Andrew. The mom kept pulling him away from where she had hidden the baby.
Oh.
So he was following her. And meanwhile, he's like, she's taking him like for a ride all over the forest. Yeah, so
that's great.
Yeah.
I'm just taking a moment just to enjoy it. Yeah. I'm always sitting here, and I know it probably will after we finish the interview.
I should have offered you a beer.
I think that this has been great. Like, thank you so much for inviting us out here. It's been wonderful just seeing everything. Like,
well, I'm so glad you guys actually took like a few years to get here, because it's a lot more developed than if you had come right after I kind of met you guys.
Yeah,
well, exactly. Actually, we haven't even talked about that and how we even got to know you. So yeah. I was going to say, so when you're not farming, what do you get up to?
Well, I work at Atlas, the Atlas Cafe, which of course is where I know both of you from.
Right, exactly.
Which is great. It's, challenging as of late, but just such an amazing family to work for, because they allow me to do my farming in the summer. They know, so I can go down to not having to work very much, and then in the winter when I have the time, I can put more effort into the Atlas. And so, and they also are very good about buying produce from me too.
Right.
So it's great.
It's always
trying to get, Mr. John over here to take some as well.
Well, I mean, I haven't been at Atlas for a few years now, but I've managed to keep up on what you're doing, mostly actually through my brother. Like, when you were talking about the ducks, I was like, oh yeah, my brother bought some ducks. And then, oh, the pork. Oh yeah, my brother bought pork. Yeah. And like, he keeps telling me what you guys are doing out here. So I'm glad we finally made it out here.
Yeah. Well, I love your brother.
Yeah.
I just wish
he's a great guy.
He was supposed to come and install a sliding glass door for me about a year ago.
Oh, no.
Still hasn't made it here yet.
I'll
mention it to him.
We've changed our mind about what we're doing about 10 times since he was going to come and do it. So it's actually a good thing that he hasn't made it out here yet.
Perfect.
All right. Well, thanks, Anne, so much for having us out here. It's been a great time.
Thank you so much. I've learned so much today,
for sure.
Yeah.
And this has been the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm the producer, William Stringer.
And I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett, your co-host.
Until the next show, stay local.
And once again, thank you for supporting us, and more importantly, supporting the people that make up your food community. We're always looking for new stories to share and people to talk with. So don't forget to follow us at Facebook at the Edible Valley Podcast, or Instagram at Edible Valley. Our website, ediblevalley.com, to tell us what you want to hear, or if you have any questions for us, email us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us, because you never know where we'll be exploring next in the Edible Valley.
Great, that is recording, isn't it?
You are recording.
Hello. Right. Who wants the volume up? Just a smidge. It's at the back.
Do you need to hear? Are you looking for vocals levels?
Yeah, that's all right. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, talk for a second, Dan.
Yeah. So what exactly did you order today? You ordered a print.